The Little Boy, submitted by Anonymous.
When I was about 10 years old, my little sister, three of my cousins, and I were having a sleepover at my grandma's house. Since my aunt took care of my grandma, we were allowed to sleep in her room. We slept on a bunk bed. Two cousins on top, my little sister, cousin number three, and I on the bottom. Before going to sleep, we would pick two movies to watch. I was known to fall asleep right away. We all made a bet that whoever fell asleep last would pick the movie for the next night. I was so excited to stay up, but I fell asleep. I woke up to everything turned off. I was so bummed that I had lost again. Then I felt this odd feeling that someone was watching me. I was on the far left side of the bunk bed by the wall. As soon as I turned towards the right side, I saw a little boy, all white, laying his chin on the bed, just staring at me about 12 inches away from my face. He looked at about 5 years old. I jumped so hard that I hit my head on the top of the bunk bed. I landed on my sister, then quickly went back to my side. Immediately, I turned back to see him. He was gone. I was terrified, but for some reason, I had this feeling the little boy was just curious. I felt that he was not evil, so I went back to sleep. The next day, I told my mom. She's had similar experiences, so I knew she would believe me. I asked her not to say anything to anyone. Later that day, my grandma calls me. She asked me to describe the little boy to her. He's about 5, and even though he was all white, kind of transparent, I could tell he used to be very light-skinned with rosy cheeks and side-parted, light brown, almost blondish hair. Then my grandma informed me this was her son. When he was 4 years old, he passed away from a disease. Although I was upset, my mom told my grandma what I had seen. That was the day I found out my grandma had lost a son. I've even seen this kid run around her house, outside. When I would see him, it looked like a white cloud with a human shape, flying, running across the yard or random places. I don't know how to describe it. And when I saw him, I knew he was good. I've seen black shadows, and every time I'm about to experience anything involving an evil ghost, I start getting this pain in my spine. I instantly know something's about to happen. I never felt this with a little kid, my grandma's son.
All right, welcome to the True Scary Stories with Edie and Nick podcast. This is the podcast where two comedians read scary stories in encounters submitted to us by our fans, the Uglies. What's up, guys? Thank you for being patient while I was sick. This podcast does have some commentary, so if you're not into that, you should check out our Just the Terror episodes. All right, cool. Well, Anonymous, I think that you have a good aura about you, and both the spirits of good and evil are going to be very attracted to that, because that is high vibrational. So they're going to be able, it's like driving by a KFC, and you know, it smells so good, mm-hmm. as opposed to like driving by a Ralph's. Right? There's still good food in there. When you drive by a KFC, you could smell the goodness from outside.
Very interesting.
Everyone knows what I'm talking about, Nick.
I know what you're talking about.
You can smell the chicken.
Okay.
So I think that's what it is, that these things feel like they can come up to you because you're like the cartoon pie on the window sill.
More food analogies.
Okay, I'm hungry. Nick, you go ahead.
Well, you know, this fan of ours, actually, what you just said is very true, because they submitted 3 more stories.
Whoa!
That we will read, basically saying the same thing. So yeah, she's very spiritual.
All right, let's keep going. Trying to Take Me, written by Anonymous.
When I was about 11 years old, I used to share rooms with my two sisters. We used to sleep in a bunk bed. Me in the top one and my two sisters shared the bottom part of the bunk bed. One night I woke up. I had this horrible feeling something was wrong. This feeling was always an indication that something was going to happen. As soon as I opened my eyes, I saw what I can describe as the roof elongating far away. Then all of a sudden it started coming down straight to my face. Rapidly. I immediately closed my eyes while turning my face away from the roof, waiting for it to hit me in the face. As I opened my eyes again, the roof was back to normal. I told my mom what I had seen the next morning. She said it was a portal opening in front of me. Now that I'm older, I reminded her about this incident. My mom said my aunt and her ex-husband used to play with the Ouija board back then. They also lived upstairs right next to our house. She did not tell me this back then because she didn't want to scare me. She thinks they opened a portal from playing the Ouija board. I'm not sure if this could be possible or could have been a portal opening in front of me. But what I did know, whatever it was trying to take me.
It's definitely a portal opened by the Ouija board. I'm sure that when they did the Ouija board, they didn't look up how to close it properly.
Yeah, and also like...
Who reads the instructions?
I think it just says, open it up and have fun with your friend, Parker
open
Brothers.
It up, talk to demons. It's like, yeah, you can't even get on the internet and talk to people without it being dangerous.
So just like you said, I think our reader does have a connection to the spirit world. So definitely if somebody's playing with a Ouija board or something like that, unbeknownst to
she's going to be involved.
Yes.
Because she's KFC.
Yes. And every spirit wants KFC.
They want that chicken. They want the famous bowl.
Yes.
That's the one I like. Or the pot pie. Okay, let's keep going. The Whistling Man, written by Anonymous.
I have had many experiences with what I thought were just dreams, till I found out they were not. I've often would be dreaming, then suddenly be interrupted by darkness, or I'd appear in another place, wondering what just happened. One night, I was dreaming about something else I don't quite remember. Suddenly, I was walking through just a black room, hearing someone whistling. Then there was a door. This door looked familiar, so I opened it and walked through. It brought me to the outside of my old house in Mexico. I remember hearing the whistling again. When I walked out, I saw a man standing on my right side with a pipe in his mouth. I was so confused to why I was there in my dream and why he was there, someone who I've never seen before. He looked to be in his 40s, wearing overalls. He looked like he belonged to those old black and white movies. I asked him who he was. As much as I want to remember his name, I don't remember which name he told me. He said he used to live here many years ago. He was mistaken by another man and was buried alive. Then they poured cement over him to make sure that he wouldn't try to get out of his grave. I remember wondering why he was telling me this. Then I woke up. I thought it was just a dream, so I didn't really pay much attention to it. But I did tell my mom about it. My mom went to ask my grandma if they ever found any bodies when they were starting construction in that house. My grandma said the workers found bones outside next to our house, but in the second floor. I was about 12 at the time, so my mom didn't tell me exactly what my grandma said. My mom just told me that he was probably just trying to tell someone he was murdered. I have not dreamed of him since, and we no longer live in that house anymore. Now that I know he was coming to me for help in a dream, I wish I could have helped him at that time.
All right, yeah, he was definitely probably trying to reach you because you were the smelliest chicken.
Yes, and you know, the thing is, the smelliest chicken still has an age, and is it ready? Is the smelliest chicken going to respond?
Right, are they just a hatchling?
Yes.
What even came first?
Yes, do they have the 11 herbs and spices added to it yet?
But I wouldn't feel bad, Anonymous, that you didn't have the chance to help him. It's not really your responsibility to help him. You're not the ghost whisperer. That's Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yes.
So it's not really your responsibility. If you can help them, then, and you want to, you should. But just like on Earth, it's not your responsibility to solve everybody else's problems.
Yeah, you can't. And maybe that was enough. Maybe him saying it was like, okay, now I can leave.
Okay, I told somebody.
Okay, like, bye.
Yeah, like when you get someone a Christmas present, it's really good and you just have to tell them. So you just tell somebody else.
Oh, man.
All right, let's keep going. Amongst Her Flowers, written by Anonymous.
Last year, I lost my grandma. Before she passed away, my aunts and uncles were debating on selling a property she has in Mexico. Some were against it, others wanted to sell it. It was heartbreaking seeing her suffer so much right before she passed away. A couple of days after she passed, she came to me in a dream. I was dreaming of something else. Suddenly, in my dream, I found myself at her house in Mexico. I was confused too as why. Everything looked exactly the same as it did 20 years ago. She looked younger, wearing a purple flower sundress, her short black hair. I was in shock to see her since I knew she was dead, but I also knew she was there wanting to tell me something. I was outside by her beloved flowers. Before she moved to California, she would devote hours to her flowers and plants. My grandma started walking towards me. We sat down on a bench where she would just sit and stare at her garden. She looked worried, and I asked her what was wrong. She said she thinks she made a bad decision about the house. She went on telling me that she had told everyone that the house was not to be on sale, and this was her final wish. Now that she passed, she thinks that it was the wrong choice. She's okay with them selling it, especially since she has seen how bad it is there now. I immediately hugged her and told her that she shouldn't worry at all. They will make the right decision. And even if it wasn't sold, maybe one day, one of our cousins or kids will reconstruct the place and make it a safe place for everyone to enjoy and spend a weekend there. She started smiling and said thank you. I asked her if there was anything else that she needed to say. She just hugged me and walked away. When I woke up, it was 6 a.m. My partner was up getting ready for work. I remember telling him to please don't let me forget what my grandma just told me, that she regrets her decision, and then I went back to sleep. I tend to write my dreams or tell him, or I'll completely forget the messages. The next day, I called my parents. I asked them what had been the final decision before she passed. It was indeed not to sell the property. I told them what grandma said and let them decide if they wanted to communicate that with everyone else, especially since most of them have never believed in our stories or abilities. She has not visited me in any more dreams since. I assume she is now in a happy place with all of her flowers.
All right. I actually love this one. I think it was a perfect way to end Anonymous's stories. Yeah, mm-hmm. I love this one. I mean, to me, it's just beautiful. I wish it would happen to me. Well, what do you think?
You know, and I think I've said it before, that time that I was around the medium that had a message from an uncle of mine that had just recently passed, which was the same thing. Family fighting over a decision about something, and the uncle just wanted to tell him, don't worry about it, let it go, whatever it may have been, right? So it's interesting that some people will hold on to that last decision, that last desire before they go. Hopefully it's something simple, you know, like this, like sell the house, all right, bye, you know, nothing major, or oh, that milk has been spoiled too long.
I would
get
love
it out
that
of
one.
There.
I would love that one. I feel like people should get more like, your husband's cheating on you. Like, why don't they ever do that one?
Well, maybe because they see at some point they're like, but this person's good for you. You'll get over it. It's okay. It's not that big of a deal. You guys are fighting over something else. It's petty. That is my decision more than that. Or maybe that's it. They just know what they know. They don't know beyond that.
Oh,
that's it.
They're not like omnipotent.
No, yeah, they just know what they know. Hey,
yeah,
because
otherwise they'd be like, this is the stock to buy.
Yes.
These are the lottery numbers.
Yes. This is basically, I told them not to sell the house, and I should have told them to sell the house.
Yeah, there's going
to
be a pandemic. Anna and Her Demons, written by S. Guest 34.
Little background before I start. I live in East Tennessee in the Appalachian Mountain area. I compare it to a rainforest sometimes, with all the vegetation and dramatic mountain terrain. If you've been, you'd know what I'm talking about. I live at the base of the mountain, at the end of a gravel road, at the end of a line of cabins. It can get a little spooky at times. Enough said about that. This happened late summer of 2021, mid-August, I guess. We had a family from Honduras living in the next house down from us. The father, Hugo, spoke a little English. The daughter spoke some, but the wife, Maria, and her sister, Anna, didn't speak any English. A few times through the summer, I went over to their house to get to know them. But I don't speak Spanish, so I gave up. I was friendly enough, though, I suppose. One Saturday night, we see Anna had passed out. My brother and I went over to try and help. She's completely unconscious. White foam is coming out of her mouth. She's still breathing and all her vitals are normal. We think maybe a heart attack? We do CPR. Fast forward, EMS gets there and puts her in the ambulance. They run the EKG and push 4 to 8 mils of Narcan to reverse a possible overdose. Not a single thing is wrong with this woman. As Hugo is getting the family ready to go to the hospital, he stops me and tells me in broken English that a little white girl came and scared my daughters when they were playing outside. Then it came and took Anna. At this point, my brother and I are freaking out a little. At the hospital, it was the same story. Not a single thing wrong with her. They released Anna the next morning. That Sunday afternoon, a Spanish-speaking friend goes with me to talk to Anna about what happened. She tells us that last night she had come home from work. The girls were terrified because they heard footsteps running around inside the house, banging on the walls, windows, and in the shower. She told them, "Don't be scared, it's nothing." She did her nightly routine and went out on the porch to sit for a while. About an hour after, she sees a little girl dressed in complete white walking in the yard. The sight of the little girl scared her nieces, so they ran inside. Then the girl starts walking towards Anna, shifting from an evil cat back to the girl. Anna gets up between the posts of the house and says, "You're not allowed in," and claims the blood and name of Jesus. The cat stood up, laughed, and grabbed Anna's throat, saying, "I will destroy your family." That's when Anna passed out. Later that night, Maria and her girl came over to my house. They say that Anna was sick again. We go to see what's up. As we go through the front door, it's straight up exorcist type stuff. Anna's halfway on the bed and halfway on the floor. Hugo is holding her arms down because she's clawing at her eyes and hair. At first, I'm thinking she's either having a seizure, is schizophrenic, or is on some kind of drug. Yet after about 10 minutes, it's clear this woman is possessed. She's writhing on the floor, clawing her eyes and hair, biting her tongue and lips so aggressively, we put a stick between her teeth to stop her. She bit the stick in half. It's nothing like I've ever seen in a seizure, mental illness case, or medical emergency. Hugo takes out his little St. Joseph statue and started waving it over Anna's head. She chuckled at him, like his attempt was a joke. By the way, she has her eyes closed for most of this ordeal. We call our Spanish-speaking friend. He starts praying and reading the Spanish RVR 1960 Bible over the phone. Well, Anna hates that. Every time he says the name of Jesus, her eyes pop open. Then she would try to claw the phone from our hands. Now, mind you, this woman's like 200 pounds, not muscle, and like barely over 4 feet tall. But she's about as strong as an ox in this state. It takes three of us to hold her down. Maria gets some holy water. The holy water wasn't real holy water. I put a few drops on Anna's forehead. It was like putting acid on her head. She freaked out so bad, shaking and clawing to get it off. I put a little more on. Same reaction. An hour goes by. She starts calming down. Then she gets up like she's back to normal. She's talking and hugging Maria. We're thinking it's all good. Then Anna makes a mad dash for the front yard, mumbling something in Spanish. Hugo freaks out and tackles her in the gravel like a defensive lineman. She's looking past us, into the darkness at someone's that we can't see. Then she asks for meat, like she wants to eat meat. Strange request, so no. She asks for water. We give her the bottle of holy water. She chugs it, completely unfazed, then tries to eat the bottle. Hugo and Maria take a cigarette and blow smoke in her face. I guess it's an exorcism tactic. She gags and coughs way more than normal. Then she says, "Lucifer is here." Hugo and I just look at each other, terrified. She's looking all around us at things in the yard that we can't see. I call it tracking with her eyes, tracking something right behind us or beside us. We take her back up on the porch and sit her down. She looks over at Hugo's truck parked in the yard. She says, "Lucifer is over there." Then all the truck lights come on. We're all low-key freaked out at this point. Our friend is still on the phone listening to what's going on. He suggests to Hugo to burn all his Catholic religious items. Hugo takes his statue of St. Joseph, rosary beads, votive candles, pictures of the saints, etc., and burns them all in the front yard. Now Anna doesn't like this at all. She gets mad, but can't do anything because we're holding her hands away from her. The fire burns for about an hour. Every time one of us goes near it, no matter what she's facing or even when her eyes are closed, it seemed like Anna could sense us near the fire. Then she'd watch us with creepy eyes. We tried to put her in a more comfortable chair and hold her up. It seemed like she was gaining consciousness, opening her eyes more, still looking around, tracking things out in the darkness. When she looks at these things, she'd act out more. In order to keep her from looking at them, we put the Spanish Bible directly in front of her eyes. She doesn't like that at all. It's like the Bible has an LED light in it that burned her eyes if she looked at it. So whenever she opened her eyes to whatever was behind us, we'd block her view with the Bible, and she instantly closed them. After a bit, she starts talking semi-coherently to Maria and Hugo about what's going on. She tells them that she wants to be with the spirits behind the house, running through the woods. All of a sudden, as she's talking, she stops and jerks her head to the right of the house. She describes a very tall woman, dressed in white, with white hair and face. Anna tells us the woman walked all the way around the house, right past us, into the kitchen. We heard banging around inside, like someone was looking for food. Anna said the woman found water and drank it. and got mad because we didn't feed it? As a woman walks out of the house, she tells Anna to read Psalm 91, then goes and stands in the yard about 40 yards from the house by a big dead tree. Anna says the woman then climbs the tree and sits on top waiting for us to feed it. It tells Anna, "I want food. Do not try to leave. I will follow you and kill you." We go inside and put Anna in bed. She seems to be getting tired, but she wouldn't stop looking through the curtains to the porch, telling us the woman wants to eat. Hugo makes it a plate of food and leaves it on the porch. We don't see anything, but my brother said when we had our back turned, a massive raccoon came up and ate the food, then ran under the porch, ran to where there was a dead-end corner, then just disappeared. Anna's looking out, watching something very intently. She tells us the Blanca muchacha is eating the food incredibly violent, like an animal, and making a big mess. Then the woman goes on to eat the trash left over from the food. Anna slowly comes back too and starts talking to us. Hugo and Anna tell me there's always weird things happening at that house. I leave them with a Spanish Bible and head to my house. It's like 4 a.m. at this point. My brother had already gone to bed 30 minutes prior. I go to work the next morning, all normal, you know. I figured the demons got sick of us and left that night. Not so.
All right. Seems like there's going to be a part two to this.
Definitely. So what do you think of it so far?
Okay. I think blowing smoke in the face of what you're supposed to be exercising, probably not a good idea. That sounds like a little something they threw in because they want to be like a comic book character or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They want to be like Black Widow or something.
Very interesting. Yeah.
I've seen movies.
Well, maybe there's like a type of smoke that maybe like priest or pastors blow
in
somebody's face.
Oh, you mean like some kind of like sage or like
Yeah, and
herbs.
These people were just like, just get a cigarette, some kind of smoke. You know, like people, they're just guessing.
Yeah.
They didn't really have holy water.
Or maybe it was something that would calm them down, you know.
That too. So it's just that. It was just guessing, you know. We don't have really holy water. We'll just say it is. You know,
yeah.
we don't know
like
what
it wouldn't
do.
Know. We'll just say you it know? Is. We'll just say it's holy
we'll just
water.
Say it's holy water.
But it's not like a knockoff Disney movie. You know, like Aladdin and the Genie or whatever those Disney movies are. The knockoff ones.
I got you. Yes.
Okay.
Raladdin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Cinder whatever.
Yes, Cinder whatever. That's a good one.
Okay, well, let's get to the part two. Part two.
That Monday night, around 10, I'm headed to bed. I see a truck pull up. I go to say hi. It's a group of four Hispanic Christians that come for Anna's demon problem. The pastor of the church, his wife, and two other women. Only one speaks English, Isabel. Hugo sets up some chairs and a table with that Honduran hospitality he has. He sets out coffee and Mexican cookies. We sit around talking about what's been going on lately. They get out a booklet with a sheet that says, Oración de Confesión General de Pecados, and start praying, repeating what the sheet of the paper says. They get about halfway through. Anna begins covering her eyes and mumbling something. Then she falls to the ground and starts seizing again. I'm like, great, round two. So Hugo and I hold her down again while the pastor and them watch her behavior. At this point, it's pretty mild. She's got the whole eye and hair claw deal going on. The family and the pastor's crew are talking back and forth about Anna's history. They finally decide it's a few different demons, and they get to work expelling them. The pastor kneels over her and commands the demons to leave in the name of Jesus. They refuse, so he commands them to tell their names. They struggle verbally back and forth for a while. Eventually, they give him their names. Then he bound them by the name of Jesus and cast them out. Every time he cast one out, he would say, Afuera, afuera, en el nombre de Jesús. Then a few minutes of the demons yelling and screaming, twisting Anna. Finally, she would throw up what looked like a pitch black hairball, which we wiped up and burned. Then the spirit, the pastor bound by name, would leave and Anna got weaker. They explained every time a demon leaves the person, they expel something physical, vomit, burp, excrement, etc. That night, they cast out four demons. It went on for hours. We ended up leaving about 4 a.m. Hugo and Maria thanked us profusely. Anna went to bed as she was completely worn out. Again, I think, wow, crazy night. Surely it's over now. Not so. Next day, I don't go to work. It's raining. At about 3 to 4 p.m., Maria's little girls come over running, saying something about Anna being sick again. My brother and I go over. Anna's on her bed acting like she has stomach pain. I figure she's sick and try to ask what's going on. She tells me the Bible I left it sitting on her desk across from the bed keeps closing by itself. She says something about the mirror behind it. Someone is watching her through it. Then she starts falling off her bed and laying on the floor. I'm stumped as to what to do. She gets up and walks back and forth between the bathroom and her room with me following. After a minute of this, I sit down to talk to my brother. Anna just waltzes out onto the back porch. I figure I'd better see where she's going because she was gone for a minute. I round the corner. She's hanging by her arms from the beam going over the railing, trying to jump off. I can't let that happen. There's rocks underneath. And if the fall didn't kill her, well, there's countless other ways for her to get hurt back there. Plus, it's been pouring rain all day, and I don't want to get soaked trying to keep her safe. I pull her back on the porch. She instantly tries to crawl through the lattice. I send my brother back to our house to get help. I have the little girl call Hugo. Anna and her two nieces are the only ones home. While my brother was gone, I finally got Anna in a hold that she couldn't get to her face. But she gets to the decorative chain on her shirt and tries to cut her wrist with a pendant on it. I wrestle it from her hand. She tries to eat the chain. I get her in the center of the porch and away from everything she can use to hurt herself. My brother gets back. Somehow she gets her hand on a rope and tries to hang herself multiple times, despite our attempts to take it from her. Again, she has her eyes closed for most of this. Every time we got the rope inches from her hand, she would sense it, I guess, and grab it. Then quick as lightning, she'd wrap the rope around her neck and tighten it. Hugo and Maria eventually get there. They help us hold her down. Hugo says the pastor and his people should be there in about an hour. While we're waiting, Anna kind of calms down for a few minutes. Then out of nowhere, she starts seeing something behind us. She tells us what it is. Hugo and Maria are freaking out. Anna starts crying, saying it's strangling her. Then she starts choking up blood. She has a very hard time breathing. She's clawing at her throat, at an invisible hand. She's staring right behind me, pleading to whatever it is to stop. Hugo and Maria are in tears and panic. I'm just sitting there, helpless. There's nothing I can really do. Anna goes limp for a minute. We all think she's dead. But I check her pulse and she's breathing slowly. We have about 5 minutes of calm. Then Anna goes back to self-harm mode, trying to get something to hurt herself with. Her brother-in-law gets the bright idea to use sheets and towels knotted together as a restraining device. We wrestle her in a plastic chair and tie her to it with the sheets, taking care not to tie too tightly so we wouldn't cut off circulation. We put pillows behind her head and did everything we could think of to make it as comfortable and safe as possible. After a few minutes, the pastor and his people are starting to arrive.
All right. The thing that always, like, with these exorcisms that always gets me is, are these people just actually having a mentally ill episode?
Well, you know, and that was the problem with exorcisms back in the day.
It seems like they used to happen a lot more, or maybe like people just don't talk about them as much. Like word of mouth doesn't, like people can watch shows and stuff, so they don't really care about other people's drama as much, mm-hmm. or like try to get in other people's business as much. But it seems like it was happening a lot in the past because people didn't know what these mental illnesses were. Yeah. And so I always wonder if this is somebody having a mental break or a bipolar. Well, I'm not a psychiatrist, but I have a lot of mental illnesses.
Well, and
diagnosed.
And that's the issue is the debate. And that's why, you know, I think we've seen things where the Catholic Church is very hesitant to get involved because it's like, we don't know if it's a true exorcism. Yeah. Go get them checked out by a psychiatrist.
I think that's what they do. That is what they do now. But it's like, why can't they go to the hospital? Why can't they get both treatments at the same time? I'm not saying for this story. I'm just saying for in general.
Well, I guess they do that at some point. They try and it's like, she's fine. Everything's okay.
Yeah.
So we don't know what it is.
And there's not so much you can do.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there was a documentary on Netflix where they were showing somebody getting exercise, like it was someone
and
like
they have
this.
To have like
multiple
a doctor.
Demons. Well, no, multiple demons and just lived a normal life. And they had to keep attempting this to get all of them out. Yeah. So the person would just live a normal life and then like, okay, go in for your exorcism treatment.
I don't think the church should be able to perform exorcisms unless a doctor is present.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Or even a nurse practitioner, or even a nurse or something like that.
Or a first responder, a lifeguard.
And then, yeah, or a lifeguard. You always throw the lifeguard. And then after they do the exorcism on those people, then they should do the exorcism on the nurse. Because they're mean to me.
Yeah.
Nurses are always mean to me when I go in the hospital.
That's right. What if they're all demons?
No.
Okay.
I can't.
I just wanted to throw it out there.
You know, my sister's a nurse.
Okay. Number
All right, we are on to the last part of this story. Before we get there, do not forget to join us on the Facebook group and the Instagram and on the website and submit us your scary story. Those are all at True Scary Stories with Edie and Nick. Nick, do you have any shows coming up? Any stand-up comedy shows?
The only one I could think of is I will be at the Dirty at 12:30 in Las Vegas on July 22nd. That's the only one I could think
of. Oh, am I going to come? Oh, no, I'm not going to come. Because I'm going to be at the Sacramento Punchline in Sacramento, mm-hmm. the 22nd and the 23rd. So you can come see Nick in Vegas or me in Sacramento. I feel like Sacramento is more of a vacation spot.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
So I feel like you should come to Sacramento.
Yeah, go to Sacramento.
All right. And don't forget after this to give us 5 stars because it's free.
Yes, it's a free podcast.
I know you like free stuff.
That we're constantly working and evolving on. All right, guys?
Okay.
And thank you for your patience. Yes. And we released it late. And thank you to everybody that came to San Diego.
Yes. Thank you. All right. Part 3.
Since Anna's securely restrained, the family, the pastor, and his crew get to talking. Another 4 or 5 hours went by with them doing more exorcism and casting demons out, praying. At one point, a Dominican lady started singing for about 20 minutes, which led most everyone else to start in. It got intense when they really started verbally hammering the demons with scripture. Even with the towels and sheets restraining her, Anna came so close to breaking the chair and the knots that held her. Eventually, they prevailed. Anna was made clean of everything. Hugo and I burned all the sheets that restrained her. We also burned the material used to clean up after she vomited up the demons. We all sat on the front porch. The family explained what all had happened in their personal life to lead up to this. It was about a 2-hour conversation, and I understood little of it. But they all understood, so I was fine with just knowing I helped. One thing I did catch, a woman and her child had died in this house years ago. They were angry with the spirits Anna had in her, or something like that. Understandably, Anna spent this whole conversation in her room. She was tired. After the people started leaving, she came out and asked me to tell her what had happened while she was possessed. I did my best using Google Translate. Then she told me what she had experienced. Basically, Anna said that she had been taken back to Honduras. She had seen her ex. She said he had a group of men practicing voodoo on a doll that looked like her. She showed me a YouTube video of a man walking through an old Catholic graveyard at night. As he would go through certain places, she would pause the video and say, "I saw this." Or in a house-like tomb that had a stone altar in the back, the men were in here with a doll torturing me. She tells me the woman in white that haunts the place, she likes to sit in the big dead tree in front of the house with that little girl in white. Finally, I go home and back to bed. It's pretty much back to normal now. Over the next couple of days, more odd things happen. That Friday evening, when I got back from work, they had moved out of the house. They left most of their things, only taking the bare necessities. I've only seen them 3 times since. That Sunday morning, we woke up to a loud bang. The dead tree the spirit liked to climb had fallen into a straight line directly towards the front door of the house. Then a month or so later, the house had been vacated for a while. The landlord sent some guys over to clean it up. I kind of know these guys, so I go over to them, talk about the house. They speak more Spanish than English, but I can understand what they tell me. Basically, they had both lived in this house before. They told me that they had both experienced supernatural events, like hearing footsteps inside and outside the house at night, violent pounding on the walls and doors, seeing faces in the corners of the window. One man had seen the woman in white, and an identical one that was dressed in all black. Long black hair, no face, and big red eyes. The white one never really came inside, but the first time he had seen the black one, it was hanging off the ceiling like a bat. The second time he saw it, it was sitting on the counter, looking at him. He told me years ago some people had died in the house under very suspicious circumstances. Now, you can believe my account of these events or not. It's really up to you. I'll tell you this, though. After that experience, I've come to take this matter very seriously, and it's more real to me now than ever before.
All right, so the thing that's haunting them is the ghost of the woman who lived there.
Well, it's a mix of things. So there was 2 people that apparently perished, which may have been the ghost and the little girl under suspicious circumstances. But Anna was also being, her ex was using voodoo against her. So then that was what was bringing the evil spirits that the ghost didn't like.
I'm so lucky I have you here to explain things to me. Okay, so they had the doll and stuff. It was a bunch of men getting together and casting spells
on the ex.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And did it ever get resolved? Or well, did...
who knows? I mean, I guess, you know, whatever they were saying, man. Aren't you guys happy that you don't have an ex that's doing this to you? Or if you do, send us
that
a story.
That is petty.
Yeah.
I've heard of people king people's car, but imagine if they send a demon to take over your soul. I mean, that is really petty.
Yeah, multiple ones.
And you know that guy's going around being like, yeah, she was the toxic one.
Yeah. You know, so she could handle it.
Yeah, so I was like pretty, I did nothing. It's like you put a demon inside of her.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what was happening. Anna had upset her ex at some point, and he decided to put a voodoo spell, and the spirits in the house did not agree with this. You know, so it was just a whole mess because of that.
You know, as it goes.
As it goes. I mean, nobody who wants a house. If you passed away in the house, you don't want demons there.
Yeah.
You're like, yo, it's enough with me here.
And the demons are trying to claim squatter's rights.
Yeah, and I'm in my favorite tree, and I got to see you.
In my favorite tree up here, man. I got to share it with the squirrels. Now you.
Yeah, so it's Gare.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. And don't forget to go see Nick in Vegas or me in Sacramento, which everybody knows is better than Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget to give us 5 stars after this. And we love you guys. We'll see you on the Facebook group.